Good morning, everybody. Good to get a few people back that were not around last Sunday. I want to do an introduction. Sitting in the third row, we have Dar Lilly, who's moving here from San Diego. Dar, you want to? Okay, great. She's living with us, so some of you will see her around occasionally. For myself, this week, I spent 3 days in Orange County. I went to a teacher's meeting for our fellowship churches, and then I went to a hackathon. Does anybody here know what a hackathon is? All right, I didn't either. I guess it's a Silicon Valley thing. So what they would do is if they had a problem they're trying to solve, they get all the engineers and the salespeople, different people with different kinds of expertise, they put them in a room and say, you can't come out of that room until you come up with a solution and a means to implement that solution. So we had a hackathon, and you hack something, that's the idea. And so we were trying to hack the idea of how we as a church can continue to grow in a culture that's changing rapidly. The stuff us old folks did just doesn't work anymore. All right, and so that was kind of fun. It's good to hang out with a lot of good friends. Another thing just to bear in mind, just over a month from now, 5 weeks from now, we're going to have a bunch of college students coming up here, spending a week with us, coming up from San Diego. By the way, I had nothing to do with this. I just found out. Are you the one who told us in the first place, maybe, or whatever? Evan didn't tell me. I'll tell you that. I've been emailing him. So we're going to have students here for a few days, sharing on campus. It just so happens that's the Wednesday we normally have midweek anyway. So we'll have a midweek service. We might be, I have no idea, is it 10 or 30? I don't know. So maybe saying, hey, can somebody stay at your place, feed them? And what we want to do is we want to get the campus ministry started again. All right, and that's the thing about campus work, you know. 3 years later, if you don't keep working, what happens? They all graduate and you don't have a campus. So we have the idea to hire some interns this summer, some full-time interns next year, stuff like that. So something to look forward to. All right, so we're in Hebrews chapter 2. Now, I gave a handout. The handout is not for you to be taking notes. The handout is for something for you to just use. The idea, how many people got copies? Did it pretty much make it around? Okay, good. So the idea there is for you to use this, hopefully, before. Now, obviously, for the first two chapters, you couldn't do it before because you weren't even given it. But what I might possibly do is sort of say, hey, does anybody have an answer to that question that was for this chapter, that kind of thing. But if you don't do it, please don't come here feeling guilty that you didn't do it, because bottom line is this is just for your help. I've already got the questions for all the chapters of all of Hebrews. We'll probably put them at the website so you can look at them if you want to do that ahead. So the idea then is when we're studying it, you've read it, and even beyond that, oh my goodness, you've thought about it, okay? That's the idea. Okay, got it? So let's do a little bit of review. Okay, so we learned yesterday that the purpose of Hebrews is so that people would remain faithful, that they would make it to heaven. The background is Christians who've been in the church for a while, 10, 15, 20, maybe even 25 years, they've done some great things, but honestly, they're getting worn out. And they're being tempted to go back to just being religious. Going back to, for them, would be Judaism. For us, it would be just to be swallowed up in the sort of the generic Christianity, you know, that we have around us, which is not a very strong Christianity. All right, and the basic outline of the book is very simple. Jesus is amazing. And so the solution to the problem is to look at Jesus. And that's what our sermon is going to be about largely today, is looking at Jesus. And it says, in view of Jesus, you should do these things, and you will definitely make it. There's a few places in Hebrews, it almost feels like the writer wants you to feel depressed. It's like, oh my goodness, terrible. I mean, there's some solemn, solemn warnings, deep warnings. But the overall tone of Hebrews is not that at all. When we get to Hebrews chapter 6, sorry about that, you'll see that the Hebrew writer expects you to feel very confident, not like overly paranoid you're not going to make it. All right, so Jesus is greater than the prophets, right? We saw that last week. Greater than the angels. We may get to it this week, probably not. Greater than Moses, greater than Joshua, greater than the high priest. He's of the order of Melchizedek, and therefore greater than the Levitical priesthood. Greater than Abraham. Greater covenant. Greater tabernacle. Greater sacrifices. And in view of that, then this is what you should do. You should pay attention. You should make every effort. You should go on to maturity. You should hold on to the faith you have, and you should live and walk by faith. And that's that let us. That's, if you weren't here last week, that's the joke. All is let us do such and such. In fact, we'll have one just right here. So that's the joke there. Ha, ha, ha. Let us. Okay, good. Great. So now we're going to be in our passage. And again, we've already had two of the Jesus is amazing passages. Jesus is so much greater than all of the prophets. Jesus is so much greater than the messengers. They're the message. He's the message. Than the angels. And here is our first admonition. We're going to be studying all the entire chapter. Let me read the first four verses. We must pay the most careful attention, therefore, to what we have heard so that we do not drift away. For since the message spoken through angels was binding, and every violation and disobedience received its just punishment, how shall we escape if we ignore so great a salvation? This salvation, which was first announced by the Lord, was confirmed to us by those who heard him. God also testified to it by signs, wonders, and various miracles, and by gifts of the Holy Spirit distributed according to his will. All right, now if somebody says to you, hey, pay attention! How do you feel if somebody says that to you? Oh, why? Was I spacing out? All right, do you feel admonished? Not by me, hopefully, but by the Bible here. I mean, it says, how much more punishment do you expect to receive if you don't pay attention? All right? So if your parents said to you, pay attention, how much greater punishment are you going to have if you don't pay attention? You know what you'd probably do? You'd probably pay attention. All right? And so if you want to make it to heaven, you need to pay attention. You need to listen up. Well, pay attention to what then? Well, what do you think? To Jesus. But more specifically, to the salvation that we have in him. What it says here, we must pay more careful attention to what we have heard. And what we've heard is the message, the gospel message of salvation. All right, you all always see the PowerPoint. I never do, so this is going to be a problem forever. We need to get a monitor here. Eventually we will. When we have all that money, we're going to get ourselves a monitor, okay? But basically what he tells us two things to pay attention to. Number one, to the things that we've heard. And then in verse 3, to so great a salvation. Now, I'm going to throw out a couple of Greek words here. I tend to only use them when I think they're really awesome words, all right? So I'm not going to use Greek all that often, but I just can't help it. So the word here, pay attention, is the word proskuneion. And it actually is a nautical term. And it's basically when you tie a ship to the wharf. So imagine you have a river, and you've got a ship on a river. Jan and I were at the Nile River this summer. And if you, in the boats there, you're on the wharf, and the water just keeps going like this, you know? And so what you have to do is you have to tie the boat to the river. So what happens if, to the wharf. So what happens if you don't tie the boat to the wharf? You just drift down the river. Now, when you're drifting down the river, does it feel like you're drifting down the river? No, it doesn't feel like anything. How do you know that you're drifting down the river? When you look to the side of the river. All right, so that's the metaphor that's being used here. We need to pay attention. Otherwise, it says we'll drift away. And again, that's another nautical term. One of the things I didn't mention last week in our little introduction is the whole issue of who wrote Hebrews. All right, and what Irenaeus said was God only knows. But the most common theories involve people who were around ports and water and stuff like that, because there's a lot of nautical terminology. This word is pararen. Is it in this? Does it say it back there? Okay, great. And it means to drift. So basically, a ship that has been carelessly tied to the wharf, what's going to happen? You know, there's going to be buffeting, and shoelace or whatever, the rope is going to get. But I bought these shoes. Jan bought these shoes, actually. It's her fault, I guess. And these shoes, I don't know, there's something about these shoes. They always come untied. It's just something about these shoes. By the way, I once read a physics article about how shoes come untied. There's an entire science of how shoes come untied. It's because when you do this, when you shake it, it loosens it up. All right? So I'm probably going a little too far in this metaphor. All right? But the bottom line is the buffeting of life, you tend to lose that mooring and you drift. Christians don't usually like suddenly fall away, right? It doesn't happen that way. What happens? They just start drifting. How do we avoid that? Well, how about by anchoring our lives in Jesus? If we don't anchor our lives in Jesus, we're going to drift out of the safe harbor and our life will become a shipwreck. That's the result of drifting. And he says something that's a little bit strange. For since the message spoken through angels. Now, if you were here last week, what was that message spoken by angels? Talked about that. I'll give you a hint. It was received on a mountain. Right? Remember, I even gave you a couple of passages from the New Testament that says the law was delivered by angels. So he's talking about the law. So what he's saying is, those who failed to pay attention to the law, what happened to them? Every violation of disobedience received its just punishment. Now, there's two words here. Are they up here as well? Yes, they are. So the two words are a parabasis and parakoe. Now, parabasis, that's a violation, right? And what that means is, literally, it means stepping over the line. So here's the line. All right, and if you step over the line, you'd be punished. But the other word is the word parakoe, which means it's translated disobedience, but what it literally means is uncareful hearing. So there are two things that got them in trouble. One, breaking the law. The other one, uncareful hearing. So the good question for you to ask yourself right now is, which do I tend to go toward? Breaking the law or uncareful hearing? Bottom line is, in this situation, it was a sin to not pay attention. All right? Not paying attention. Not carefully listening to the law. He says, if every violation, the first one, and every disobedience, if every sin and every non-careful listening resulted in punishment, how much more do you think we will be punished if we do not pay attention to so great a salvation? This is a strong warning. This is not a yippy-skippy thing. God is trying to get our attention. So, again, I want you to ask yourself right now, which do you tend toward? Just blatant violation? And some of us, that's exactly what our problem is. Or is it uncareful listening? And I want you to notice, verse 3 says, how shall we escape? I mean, that's a rhetorical question, right? How shall we escape? And if we do not pay attention, how shall we escape? What's the answer? We won't escape. And again, you know, when you hear these passages, it almost feels like, you know, the goal of Hebrews is to make you scared and paranoid that you're going to fall away at any moment. But believe me, no. Basically, what he's saying, just we need to pay careful attention. So, it says there, let me see. I think I'm ready for the next slide here. How shall we escape? Now, he says, we should not ignore so great a salvation. That's verse 3. So how might we ignore this great salvation? Now, think about it. The salvation we have in Jesus. And he says, we can't ignore that. So how can we ignore this great salvation? One is by just not looking at Jesus, because Jesus is the author of our salvation. But in the book of Hebrews, another way we could ignore so great a salvation is by just being religious. All right, so have you been more religious than looking at Jesus? That's something for you to really think about. Or another thing is just not being motivated by our salvation. What motivates you? Why do you do the things you do? Do you do it because you see Jesus, the author of your faith? Do you do it because of the salvation that we have? And he says, how shall we escape if we ignore so great a salvation? The simple answer is this. We shall not. And then he wants to remind us of how we heard this salvation. Again, he's trying to explain what it is we need to pay attention to. So then he's telling us how we heard it. It says here, it was first announced by the Lord. All right? In other words, Jesus said it. So where do you find the things announced by the Lord? You go to the Gospels, right? So we need to be reading the Gospels. We need to be constantly going there. We're going to be doing a lot of that, okay? You need to be looking at Jesus. And then it says, it was confirmed by us, to us by those who heard him. So how can we also learn about this salvation by going to those who heard him and confirmed it? Maybe by reading maybe Acts, or maybe 1 and 2 Corinthians, or 1 Peter, or even Hebrews. So basically saying, this is the gospel proclaimed by Jesus and proclaimed by the apostles. And then he says, God also testified to it by signs, wonders, and various miracles, and by gifts of the Holy Spirit distributed according to his will. And so you're probably aware that there were different manifestations of the Holy Spirit in the early church, right? What would happen is, for example, Philip went to Samaria. He preached the gospel. All right, but what did they not have? They didn't have the Bible. So what they needed was they needed miraculous signs to confirm the message, because a lot of this inspired message they were hearing wasn't coming from the Bible. It was some person standing up there and saying, this is what Jesus wants you to do, all right? And so therefore they were given miraculous gifts, such as speaking in tongues and healings and things like that. Now, I don't know, anybody here had their hands laid on them by an apostle? No? Okay, so probably you don't have these signs, wonders, and miracles. But you know what? We don't really need these signs, wonders, and miracles, because we have the completed message. So this is a message delivered to people who didn't have the New Testament. So how were they to know this thing that they're supposed to pay attention to? It came from Jesus, it came from the apostles, and then it came from inspired teaching. They had inspired teachers at that time. All right, so what's the summary of the first part of our sermon? We need to pay attention. We need to listen. How do we do that? Well, by reading the message, by contemplating the message, by applying the message. How are you doing? Have you been paying careful attention to the salvation that we have? All right, and then here's the part that I almost started last week, but I said, no, it's not worth it. So what he's going to go back is he's going to talk a little bit about angels again. Now, this is one of the harder parts of Hebrews, but we'll get it. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. So let's read it. Actually, it's awesome. It's in the Bible, but all right. It is not to angels that he subjected the world to come, about which we are speaking, but there is a place where someone has testified, what is mankind that you're mindful of them, a son of man that you care for him? You made them a little lower than the angels. You crowned them with glory and honor and put everything under their feet. In putting everything under them, God left nothing that was not subject to them. Yet at present, we do not see everything subject to them. Who's he talking about? He's talking about us. He's talking about human beings. Now, we have to go back to the garden. All right, what did God say to Adam and also to Eve? Basically, he put them in charge of everything, right? Therefore, we can do whatever we want to nature. We can pollute the world because we're in charge. We can do whatever we want to it, right? Wrong. No. In 1 Corinthians, he says, those who have been given a trust must prove faithful. But see, the original intention was for us to be over the angels, for us to have this glorious relationship with the world here, but we messed up really badly. So, and by the way, I think it's 1 Corinthians 6, verse 3, where Paul says, just so you know, you guys are going to be judging angels. All right? So right now, we're lower than the angels. Lower in what sense? Well, lower in power. All right? And in fact, it says here in verse 9, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for a little while, now crowned with glory and honor because he suffered death so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everybody. So what's all this? What's he talking about? What's he talking about being made a little bit lower than the angels? What he's talking about is, guess what he's talking about? He's talking about Jesus. All right, so here's the deal. Man, by the way, he says, what is mankind that you're mindful of him, the Son of Man that you care for him? Now, Jesus is sometimes called the Son of Man, right? In fact, Jesus even called himself the Son of Man. That's why some people get confused in this passage. But it turns out in the book of Ezekiel, if you read it, Son of Man is used of people. In fact, 80 different times in the book of Ezekiel alone, Son of Man means you and me. All right, so that's what he's talking about. So when he says, what is mankind that you're mindful of them, the Son of Man that you care for them, he's repeating himself. This is common in Hebrew literature. It's a couplet. He basically says the same thing twice. So he made us a little lower than the angels. We were supposed to be crowned with glory. Everything was supposed to be under our feet, and yet he made us lower than the angels. But what's he talking about? He's talking about what he did to Jesus. So Jesus is greater than the angels, right? That's what he just finished saying. But what did Jesus become for us? He became lower than the angels. Jesus became like us so that we could become like him. That's the message. That's what this is all about. All right? The bottom line is we messed up really badly. God intended for us to be in the garden, to be living in glory and glorious relationship with him and glorious relationship with one another. But because we rebelled, he made us lower than the angels. And those cherubim, they're standing, you know, at the Garden of Eden saying, you ain't getting in here. So because we were kicked out of the garden, where did Jesus go? He came here so he could bring us back into the garden. So this little kind of hard section, verse 5 through 9, was like, what's he talking about? I'll tell you what he's talking about. He's talking about Jesus. The message is Jesus became like us, lower than the angels. All right, Jesus, it kind of like this. It's like Jesus became, I don't know, a cockroach to save the cockroaches, or Jesus became a mouse to save the mice, or something like that. He's up here, we're down here. He became like a slave to save the slaves. This is the picture of Moses. In fact, he's going to talk about that in chapter 3. And believe me, when he talks about becoming like us so that we can become like him, he's going to make the comparison with Moses. Moses, who was in the palace with the king, who left that palace and became a slave and lived amongst the slaves. Well, that's exactly what Jesus did. And that's why he wants us to look at Jesus, all right? So were you a little bit confused by this passage? Maybe you were, but hopefully not. In fact, look at this. Let's go forward to Hebrews 2:16 so you see what he's trying to get at. For surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. And who are Abraham's descendants? We are Abraham's descendants. Okay, so that's what he's talking about. Great. So now let's get into this whole thing, Jesus became what Jesus became for us. And it's a beautiful thing. Jesus suffered like us so that we are saved. Because he came here, we are of the same family. Because he shared our humanity, we are no longer slaves. Because he is like us, he is a merciful high priest. Because he became like us, we can become like him. Because he suffered, he can relate and help those who are tempted. This is the beautiful, the most beautiful thing about Jesus. Remember from last week's, I keep saying remember, okay? If you weren't here, please get the lesson, all right? But I said a lot of things last week. Obviously, it's the first chapter, so it's an introduction. But there are a lot of qualities of Jesus. And I said last week, there's that one quality of Jesus, the one that we tend to not notice. But I believe it's intended to be the principal one to notice. All right? And it's it says, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. Jesus is our high priest. Now, what makes a good priest? What is the job of a priest? The job of a priest is to be a bridge. To be a bridge between the profane and the holy. Now, which are we, profane or holy, in that context? We're profane, okay? Sorry about that, but, you know, what can I say? That doesn't mean, like, profanity. Well, profane, all right? So, basically, the priest needs to be able to communicate to the holy from the profane. And the ideal priest speaks the language of the holy and the profane. And it's going to say in this passage that Jesus became perfect. Now, wasn't Jesus already perfect? The answer was, it depends what you mean by perfect. So let's read the first couple of verses in this section. Okay, this is beautiful stuff. Again, it's sort of deep stuff, but it's beautiful stuff. So let's read it. Hebrews chapter 2. All right, so basically, now we know what you're talking about, made us lower than the angels, right? It's kind of weird. It's like we wouldn't put it that way. But he says, then he made Jesus lower than the angels. Good. In bringing many sons and daughters to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the pioneer of their salvation perfect through what was suffered. Both the one who makes people holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters. So it says here, in bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should be made the pioneer. The word here is pioneer. It could also be author. So Jesus is the pioneer. What does a pioneer do? What they do is they go into unexplored territory, right? So they go into unexplored territory. They sort of check it out. They kind of sort of figure out the lay of the land. And then they kind of figure out what would be the safest way to occupy it. They come back and say, y'all come on in. So Jesus is the pioneer. The other translation would be author. He is the author of our salvation. He's the one, the Greek word is archegos. We get archetype. That's a big fancy word. He's the author, the founder, the pioneer, the source, the origin. He's the one who paved the way for our salvation. And the way he did that was by coming down here. He came down here and then he went up there. And so why did he have to come down here? Because, see, the perfect high priest knows the language of God and the language of people. He knows the language of the holy and the language of the profane. Well, which language was Jesus not particularly familiar with? He was not familiar with the profane language. Now, we're using metaphors here, right? There's a lot of metaphors here. All right, so basically then, he definitely got God. I mean, since he was God, do you think he kind of understood the language of God? I'm pretty sure he had that down. He was fluent in the language of God. But what he didn't have is us. So he came down here to be like us. Okay, and so he became profane so that we could become holy. That's what made him perfect. This is a big word. Remember I said last week, I'm going to just have to stop saying that. But last week I said the word better is in Hebrews like 13 times. And the word perfect is in Hebrews 15 times. And it's this word teleos. Now we think of perfect to mean without any error, right? Something is perfect is something that has no mistakes. But that's not the principal meaning of this word perfect. The principal word of the meaning of the word perfect is mature or complete. So Jesus was not a perfect high priest before he came here. He was not. He didn't know our language. And he came here so that he could know our language. This is the incarnation. Some people say the resurrection is the greatest miracle in history. But C.S. Lewis says the greatest miracle in history is the incarnation. That God became flesh. And when he became flesh, he was the author of our salvation. And he was the completer of our salvation. He's the pioneer and the perfecter of our salvation. He's the initiator and the completer of our salvation. In Hebrews 12:2, it says he's the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. So here he says he's the pioneer and perfecter of our salvation. And then Hebrews 12:2, it says he's the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. He's the one who shows us the way, both in that he did it first and that he completed it. He is the perfect high priest. Jesus is awesome. Amen. All right. And so the question is, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about the fact that Jesus became like us so we could become like him? How would you like to become a cockroach? Okay. How would you like to become, I don't know, a dog or something like that? I like dogs, but I'm sorry, they're kind of a lower level. Okay? Jesus became something much lower. You know, imagine this. You know, a rich person in all kinds of fancy clothes, they kind of go walking around in the slums, and they're giving out, I don't know, dollar bills or something like that. And the people in the slums are like, who's this guy? Jesus was not sitting in some kind of a air-conditioned office, you know. So we're down here in the factory floor slaving away, sweating. And you know, and it's not like Jesus up in the air-conditioned office saying, what's wrong with you guys? You need to work harder. Jesus left the air-conditioned office and he came down and he went down on the factory floor. In becoming human, Jesus forged the way for us into the presence of God. Amen. That's why he's the pioneer. He's the one who came. He's the pioneer, he's the beginning, and he's the perfecter. We couldn't go to God, so he came to us. He became a cockroach, so he could become a, I don't know, whatever the other thing is. I don't know. It's like somebody saying, you know, yeah, you know, let's say you suffered sexual abuse and some person says, man, I can really relate. You know, somebody says, you know, a white person says to a black person, I can really relate to how you feel. That's a bunch of nonsense. Don't even say that. You don't know what, you have no idea. But Jesus can totally relate. That's the beauty of that. He became like us so we could become like him. Let's read this, the rest of this section. All right. Both the one who makes people holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. Because Jesus came down here, we're in his family. That's beautiful. What a beautiful thought. So Jesus is not ashamed to call us brothers and sisters. God, the God of heaven, says brother and sister. That is a beautiful thing. He says, I'll declare your name to my brothers and sisters. In the assembly, I'll sing your praises. Now, this is a reference. This is a messianic prophecy. And basically, it's what Jesus is doing in heaven right now. Jesus is up there in heaven. He's saying, God, just, you know, that's my brother. That's my sister. I just want you to meet them. That's what he's saying to the Father. And again, I'll put my trust in him. And again, here I am and the children God has given me. So Jesus is in heaven. Go to Revelation 5, read about that. He's saying, hey, God, look who I brought with me, my brothers and my sisters. I went down there and I'm bringing them up. That's what Jesus did. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity so that by his death, he might break down the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives are held by slavery to their fear of death. I mean, Jesus came in and he freed us from slavery. Right? In John 8, Jesus says, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. He says, you guys are a bunch of slaves. But he freed us from that. He came down. He became like us. I mean, I don't know if you appreciate how amazing it is that Jesus became like us. He burped and he got sick. He stubbed his toe. Jan stubbed her toe. It's been painful for a couple of weeks. I mean, that's pretty amazing. But if Jesus hadn't done it, we would have still been slaves. He became like us. Oh, we haven't gotten to the best part yet. Verse 16, for surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. And we are those people. For this reason, he had to be made like them. Fully human in every way. Jesus was omniscient. But when he came down here, he wasn't omniscient anymore. He was omnipotent, right? And he came down here and he wasn't omnipotent anymore. He got sick. He tripped and fell over. You know, when he was working in the carpentry shop, he missed the nail and got himself in the thumb and it got bruised. He did all that. He became like us. Why? Because so that he could be the high priest for us. For this reason, he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God. God, that's the message in Hebrews again and again and again. Jesus is our high priest. Now, I want to go on and on about this high priest stuff, but we're going to get to that in chapter 4. Believe me, I'm holding back a little bit. I want to talk about this priest stuff. I'm going to get into it. Jesus is our great high priest. And what's he doing? He's interceding for us right now. But if he hadn't come down here, he couldn't bring us up there. That's the deal. That's why he was incarnated. All right, a faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he's able to help those who are being tempted. You know, Jesus suffered in many ways. In fact, later on in Hebrews 4, he's going to say, he suffered in every way like us. But you know what the greatest suffering for Jesus was? It was the temptation. Now, for us, before we were Christians, temptation wasn't suffering at all, right? Temptation, sin, piece of cake. You know, there are ways that we suffer as Christians that the world doesn't suffer at all. And temptation is suffering. You know, because what's happening is when you have a temptation, it's kind of, there's a desire there. And the temptation sort of hits that desire. And you're like, oh, I have that desire. And it's a kind of suffering to not give in to that desire. But Jesus never, ever gave in, not even one time. And I just imagine him like, you know, he's on that cross and they're saying, you said you could do all this. You don't know nothing. Come down from that cross. Do you think he wanted to come down from that? Do you think he wanted to just blitz those guys? Jesus suffered. That's why he can help us. That's why he can have compassion for us. Compassion to feel together. You know, the purpose of the sermon is twofold. One is to just think for a while about how amazing Jesus is. That he came down here and became a high priest for us. Am I in the... Oh, perfect. So, point number one is, he became like us so we could become like him. What a beautiful thought. But, so what should we do? Well, you know what we should do? We should pay careful attention. This week, let's pay careful attention to the author, the pioneer. Not only did he begin our salvation, he completed our salvation. He is the pioneer. He is the perfecter of our faith. Let us pay attention to Jesus. Let us fix our eyes on Him, our minds on Him, our hearts on Him, our emotions on Him. Don't drift. Do not drift. Do not let your mind drift. How many days this week are you going to have a quiet time? 7 days. What if you skip one day? Double up the next day. All right? That's what I do. By the way, I tell you, I don't actually read the Bible every day. But I read it a lot. Okay? Because I want to fix my eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of my faith. Thank you very much.
It just made me